One of these souls returned home wearing a rather dirty coat. I found him standing by a well, his hands cupped together, trying to clean his stain-covered coat. It was impossible now to tell what these stains were, whether blood or must, they were simply a mass of filthy marks. So, here he was now, standing beside the well, thinking he could get rid of these stains. I went up to him and asked him what he was doing. His reaction wasn't all that friendly despite the fact that all I wanted to do was help him. "Can't you see how dirty my coat is?" he answered me. "It'd be better if you brought me something to remove these stains." "You know," I replied, "this substance of yours for removing stains, the kind you had when you were on Earth, is not something we have here. We certainly do have means of removing stains, but it is a very different sort of thing to what you imagine it to be." He nevertheless simply continued that he wanted me to help him get rid of these marks. He felt utterly ashamed, he said. He had never in the whole of his life been accustomed to going round in such a dirty state, in stained clothes like these. Most important of all, he said, he simply couldn't imagine where the stains had come from, and anyway, he was sure these clothes didn't belong to him. It had to be a mistake, an error on someone's part, he said. "Dear brother," I answered, patting him on the shoulder, "there is absolutely no error involved here. This is your coat, it belongs to you." At this he stared back at me, clearly reluctant to accept what I had told him, and replied once again, "I'll wish you'd help me get rid of the stains." "No," I answered him. "Even in our world you won't be able to get rid of those stains with water. We have other means of doing that." "What sort of other means?" he wanted to know. "Well, you see," I told him, "this is a completely different kind of life here, but it's not something which can be said in just a few words. I couldn't explain all this to him by the well," I said. "We would need to continue our conversation together for much longer than this, and only then wouldn't be able to tell him how to get his coat clean again." I drew his attention to what he must have heard himself on his arrival in this world, when he had been told about the more important of his failings. "These stains on his coat," I said, "were nothing other than the result of his imperfect life. The fact that his coat was so dirty was a consequence of spiritual law, and the dirt would only go away, and his appearance thus change for the better, once he succeeded in adapting himself to conditions here in this new world." He replied by telling me that he had had so many fine, clean clothes and a beautiful house besides, with everything a person could wish for inside and out, and now he found himself in nothing but misery and filth. "Yes, yes," I answered, "and you were a Christian, too, weren't you? Didn't you realize that all that earthly glitter is worthless, that in the end it is worth absolutely nothing at all? Even if a man is dressed in the finest clothes, if his soul lacks beauty, and if his heart has no warmth, there is nothing he will be able to do to improve his spiritual appearance." My friends didn't want to try to understand this, however. He refused to be satisfied with what I had said and answered, "I just want to go back. Don't like it here. I want to be back in my world again where I lived and worked for so long. I've got all my comforts there. I can be among people of my own kind. I feel at ease there. But here, in all this filth, I feel terrible. And when I look around me, everyone is so unkempt and rough-mannered. I quite refuse to have anything to do with them." "Do as you please," I replied. "And if you think you will be better off, go back to where you came from. See how far you get. But I would remind you of this. You no longer have a material body, and you are no longer bound by the physical laws of Earth. You are bound instead by the spiritual laws of this world, the world you are in now." For the time being it was just not possible for him to settle down to life in this world, he insisted, and with that took his leave of me and went back to the world from which he had come. His desire for the earthly world was so great that it was as if he were drawn back there by a magnet. He found his people again, but he was only able to live there for a certain amount of time. He was then called back and made to understand that he had to return to the spiritual world. "And so, I have experienced all kinds of things here. Some souls complain about the possessions they have left behind or which have been taken from them. When one engages them in conversation, they soon begin to talk about their job, their achievements, and the important positions they held. In fact, everyone they meet is regaled with stories about the things they have left behind, as well as their successes in life, whereupon they conclude that they have secured the other's respect and admiration. It is then that they suffer their severest disappointment. For here all are equal, and this is a most painful truth for those newly returned to have to bear. It is something with which they cannot come to terms. Should we then try to direct their attention to the inner life, saying to them, "Surely you must have been aware that there is another world?" They reply, "Well, we just never gave it any thought. It wasn't something we ever concerned ourselves about," and they then proceed to complain that this was our fault for not having taken a more prominent part in human affairs. "We ought to have made it clearer to them," they tell us, "that life doesn't simply end with the death of the physical body, then they would have given much more thought to how they lived." Indeed, but that would have been far too simple a revelation of the divine world, we have to say in reply. God does not make his heavenly realms known just like that. You were living at a time in which you were repeatedly made aware of the Christian festival days, and you also had the commandments given to you. But for all that, you allowed God to remain at too much of a distance for you to be able to perceive him. Then they tell us that it wasn't considered good form to talk about God in company. They would have simply made a laughing stock of themselves. "It's not all that good form for us to be talking to you now," is our reply to that. "But we take our time. The right way of doing things for us is to engage you in conversation only when you have progressed to higher levels, and with that we make it clear to them that we intend this conversation to be brief and not to be repeated for some time. As it is my task to comfort souls or spirit beings such as these, I assess them again, case by case. Some of them seem to have largely fixed attitudes. They still have so much of the human way of looking at things when they come over, and we have to adjust the way we talk to them accordingly. Others again are quite ready to adapt themselves to the new conditions here, and we naturally treat them very differently. The most difficult thing for these newly returned souls, however, turns out again and again to be the matter of their adjusting themselves to the new world and accepting its laws and principles of organization. For as I said earlier, they still carry so many human feelings within them. Their innermost being is still imprinted with attitudes formed during their earthly lives, and they are not yet freed from the entanglements of these feelings. They have arrived with these human passions, but it is not the body that contains them. The physical body is quite meaningless in this respect as it is perishable, but the soul holds within it the virtues and the passions. The soul is eternal. It is a thing of living substance and can never be destroyed. It does not die when the human being dies. It lives on. When death approaches, and the time comes for the mortal body, now grown heavy and burdensome, to be laid aside, soul and spirit begin to yearn for contact with a greater and truer reality. They are pulled towards this new world even while still encased in mortal thinking and moved by desires that belong only to earthly life. There is something within them which impels them to enter this world, an inner power which is present and which releases only the smallest trace of itself, but which, even in minute amounts, is capable of increasing their longing to return to the world beyond and rejoin life there as a true friend. For the soul, this is like being in a dream, especially when the spirit of the person first re-enters the world of the beyond and finds it a similarly disorienting experience. On the one hand, it wants to embrace the new world, but on the other hand, this desire is outweighed by a longing to return to the old world. And sometimes it is the as yet unreleased powerful emotions which come to the surface and find expression. Dealing with these emotions or passions in this world presents a difficult task to the spirit beings concerned. For a certain period of time they are able to live in the old states of desire and strong emotion, as they did on earth. They are able to return to the earthly realm and enslave themselves to the same vices as before. But they are not allowed to do simply whatever they want. If they prove unable to free themselves from these vices and passions, they will eventually be led back with the use of gentle force. This, then, is what happens to those spirit beings who have never concerned themselves with higher thoughts in their earthly lives. In such cases, the subtle force, that quiet longing for something higher and better, is unable to find expression. There are many, however, who have the intelligence to recognize that in this new world, they stand under another power altogether, and that other conditions now prevail to which they are prepared to adapt themselves. They recognize that there is no way of avoiding this. Thus, he who has the will to change makes the most rapid progress. Today, however, things are not so simple. When souls return after having previously enjoyed a very comfortable life, able to provide for themselves whatever they wanted, when they suddenly find themselves in a world which has nothing to offer them, or rather, which for the time being offers them nothing of any value equal to what they have known before, they are unhappy, deeply unhappy. One needs to tell such souls repeatedly, "Yes, yes. What a wonderful time you were born in. Your world was a beautiful place indeed. How lovely it was where you used to live. You had plenty to eat. You never had to go hungry, and because you never went hungry and never needed to ask yourself where you would lay your head at night, you now find yourself unhappy with this world. You are hankering still after the same comforts you had in your earthly life. At the time that I lived, however, hunger was something we simply had to put up with, and there were days when a mother would eat nothing just so that her children could get enough. When one was ill and in pain, there were no powders or pills, one simply had to cope with the pain oneself. Oh! How happy one was to be rid of one's pain and to be able to live in a world where, from now on, the spiritual body would never have to suffer in that way anymore. And those who lived in a world in which the means were available to remedy even the slightest pain, how little they suffered from pain and general discomfort. Well, that's when the demands come thick and fast. We want something nicer than this. What they have had, but still they want something better. It is not easy to find suitable words with which to help these souls on their return home, or to know how to guide them in the right way. And I would draw your attention, you people of Earth, to the fact that where you are living now, in your world, conditions are very good indeed. You have clothes, all the clothes you want. You can dress yourselves up in the most wonderful arrays of color, exactly as you like. But when, by contrast, souls return home and are obliged to live in solitude and drabness, whereas it has been their longing and expectation to have a much finer life now, they are deeply unhappy. Fortunate are those who were true believers, who had a connection to and an inner tie with our world and who did good deeds. They knew the commandments and knew exactly how they ought to behave. They were aware that life is transitory and that after death other laws and conditions would prevail. The fortunate ones are thus those who are prepared for the future. It is they who are permitted to enter into a world of beauty, and who will receive more beautiful things than they did formerly, in their earthly lives. In this way each soul experiences the heaven that he or she has earned during his or her time on earth. For us it is a great joy to be allowed to greet such a soul when he or she returns home, and to be able to say, "We are so pleased that you allied yourself with us." Indeed, people do not give us their support as a matter of course, they most certainly do not. People believe, you see, that they will compromise themselves by speaking out about the other world, about spirit beings, heaven, and God. Whereas, whoever has done so, whoever has expressed knowledge of this kind in the right place and at the right time, will be rewarded. And they need have no misgivings about the clothes they find themselves in, which are often, initially, less than perfect and not as distinguished as they might have wished. There is certainly much that is appropriate to complain about with respect to the clothes that souls wear, as far as their outer appearance is concerned. But the more advanced brothers and sisters are only too ready to make suggestions as to what might be done to improve how they look. And to this end, souls will be required to put themselves into the service of those around them, giving expression to the divine laws in all that they do. In this way, those who have now returned home come to learn these laws and become acquainted with some of the more advanced brothers and sisters. Before much dialogue of this sort can take place, however, all kinds of things must first be experienced in the company of one's peers, including listening to one another's complaints and tales of woe over and over again. Among such souls there will be those who have left behind little in the way of possessions, and who didn't have positions of social prominence. At the same time there are others who did have quite some standing previously, and who then want to tell their neighbors all about it, considering themselves entitled to preferential treatment. But of course such individuals receive nothing of the kind, and for that reason many of those who return home have great difficulty finding their way in this new world. And so it has been my responsibility to tell you about these things. In closing, I would like to ask you to do the following. Think back to 80, 100, or even more years ago. How much misery there was then, wasn't there? You talk about the hunger that exists in the world today, and of nations which face starvation. Yes, indeed, that is how things are. And if we go back in time, the levels of starvation were even worse. You yourselves, however, are able to eat till you are full. There is never any need for you to go hungry. But if a starving man dies and awakens to a better world, even if that world hasn't got all the comforts to offer him, he will still be happy with that world, limited though it may be. For he will no longer have to suffer hunger in that new world, no longer have to endure pain. These problems he had as a man living on earth are now firmly in the past. It is the duty of all people on earth to strive upwards. Today, much greater demands are placed on souls returning home than was the case in my day. We had nothing. We lived in poverty and in far humbler circumstances, and thus we were able to work through a good part of our spiritual purification during earthly life itself, by meeting head on the challenges that our poverty imposed on us. People today, however, are seldom able to work through much of their spiritual purification while still on earth. They are barely acquainted with the path they must eventually follow. Instead, they choose the primrose path, the path that is the prettiest and most accommodating. When such souls return home, much greater demands will be made of them and their upward journey consequently more difficult. In the spiritual realm, they will have to achieve more before they are allowed to advance to the next level. In other words, they will be given more to accomplish than those who died of hunger. The latter will receive comfort and reassurance, the gates of the heavenly world will be opened to them and they will be supported on their upward journey. The former, who have lived in abundance, will be expected to work harder and achieve more, and the gates of heaven will simply not be opened to them. They enjoyed a better, nicer life while on earth and experienced many wonderful and awe-inspiring things which should have prompted them to ask themselves where the power to make all these things possible could have come from. It is precisely because this is a question they will seldom, if ever, have asked, that the demands made upon them will be that much greater. This has been the task that I have been given to carry out on your behalf, to explain these things to you. Do not be disappointed if our world does not offer you the same comfort and beauty as your own. Just remember that you can enjoy the most wonderful music in this world, and the most glorious works of art. Whether, however, you will be able to experience these things straight away, here in the heavenly realms, is of course another matter. And so, I have said enough. I will return now to my own world and once more stand ready to offer one among the many souls coming home my help and loving attention. I will tell that soul that I was here and that it was made possible for me to report these things to people on earth. Not all of you who are present have believed what I have told you. How truly astonished you will be then when you finally see these things for yourself. God bless you. Address by the Ascending Spirit Threesier. Received on 4 May 1966 in German through Beatrice Brunner. Jacob, Faith in God is All Important Personal Report, 7 July 1965. God bless. Dear brothers and sisters, my name is Jacob. I shall tell you what happened when I returned to the spiritual world, and how my attitude changed there. During my life on earth I could not believe in God, I could not find him. I had little sense of responsibility and could see no purpose in life. My lack of belief led me to make many mistakes in my life, and even after I had arrived in the spiritual world, I could not give up my lack of faith. After I had left my earthly garment behind and opened my eyes in the new world, I felt no different. There was only one thing that made me feel that I had died. I was surprised to see that my surroundings had changed. They were not as they had been in my earthly life. The people, too, were different. However, that was not enough to assure me that I had really died and was now a spirit. I thought that everything I saw here was only a dream. I told myself that I was dreaming, and I spoke to those who were with me as if I were in a dream. "Why are you so worried?" I asked them. "You are all dreaming, just as I am, but this dream will pass, and you will all wake up just as I will." The others answered that this was no dream, they had been in this state too long already for that to be true. But their attempts to convince me were futile, and I kept a little apart from them. I could not bear to listen to their moans and complaints. I did not like it at all, but I was sure that this dream would soon come to an end. I was rather puzzled as to how I came to be in this house with the others, and after I left it I sat outside and dozed for a while. Then I went for a walk, dreaming as I thought, in the neighborhood. The fact that everything looked the same to me as it had done during my human existence, confirmed my belief that I was dreaming. There were trees and animals as well. I was able to think and had a body with hands and feet. What else could this be but a dream? So I went on believing that I was only dreaming. Then I had a closer look at my surroundings. A woman came up to me weeping and crying. She shook me and asked, "Can you tell me where my child is? We were both drowned, you know, but now I find I am still alive. Where is my child? I cannot find my child. Who took him from me? Have you seen my child? Help me look for him." I answered, "You are dreaming. You did not drown, otherwise you would be dead, and you must admit that you are alive. You are standing on firm ground, so you must be alive. You can see houses, animals, trees and bushes, just as nature produces them, only for the moment we are seeing everything as though in a dream." She replied, "I wish it were a dream. But I know for certain that I was on a ship with my child and my friends. A storm came and the ship sank. I know that we drowned." I laughed and told her to calm down, saying that she would soon wake up from her nightmare. However, she refused to listen to me and reproached me, saying it was time I realized that this was not a dream but reality. She added, "Can you not see that all the people here are strangers? If we were still living on earth we would meet our friends and relations, we would still have our own homes. Where are our homes? Neither of us can find them." All could say to they was, "Well, one does have strange dreams, as you know." But she had already left me. For a while I watched her to see where she went and what she was going to do. She was still crying and calling for her child, asking all whom she met, "Have you seen my child? I have lost my child. He died with me. Where is my child?" Then a woman I did not know, went up to the weeping mother and I could hear her say, "Don't worry, your child is safe." The unhappy mother sank to her knees, begging, "If you know where my child is, then give him to me, for I am his mother." But the unknown woman said, "For the time being you cannot have your child, because he is in his own heaven." "Did I hear correctly? In heaven," she said. "I heard it distinctly. There was certainly no sign of heaven where I was. Heaven could not be so ordinary," I thought. Was I dreaming after all? I heard this stranger saying to the mother, "When you have calmed down and can believe what people tell you, then I shall bring the child to you. You will be allowed to see him, but not to keep him." I could hear what the stranger was saying quite well, but to make sure I came closer to her. I had by now become a little uncertain, and I felt that this dream was going on a little too long. Moreover, I kept seeing the other people, and I found I could talk to them. On a closer look, I did find a difference in the surroundings. There was something unfamiliar about the people and the houses here, and the whole environment struck me as being strange. Admittedly, I could touch my body, and I could think just as I could on Earth. There were also many things I could remember. Still, I could not understand how life could continue in this way after one had died. How could I possibly be in this village which looked like other villages on Earth? I listened to the stranger talking to the mother, "If you calm down and stop crying and believe what people tell you, then you may have the child with you for a short time." The mother immediately promised to calm down and to do everything she was asked if she could see her child again. I heard the woman say, "Then follow me, because first you must be told about certain things. You have left the earth, and you are now in a new world." When I heard these words, I no longer felt sure where I was. Is it possible that I have died? But if so, how could I talk to the other people here? And why do they look exactly like human beings? Could this be another world? Hitherto I had not believed either in God or in life after death, and I simply could not accept that I should now have to change my mind. Meanwhile, the two women had entered the very house where I had been offered a home. I still felt that all this was only a dream, but after listening to this conversation about having entered into a new world, I began to look at things a little more carefully. I did not go into the house, but instead I walked around nearby. Again, something happened that demanded my full attention. Someone came along shouting with joy and singing, "I am so happy." He kept repeating, "I am the happiest being alive." He came up to me, shook hands with me and said, "Can you be as happy as I am?" I shout for joy and leap into the air, because I am well again, have got my legs back again. I asked him, "What do you mean? Why do you say that you have got your legs back again?" "It is true," he answered. "I was in the war, and both my legs were shot away, and from that moment my life on earth was a misery. I could only push myself along on the ground. In order to earn money, I joined up with some other disabled and sick people. I had been given an invalid car, and so we all drove to fairs together. We took our barrel organ and played it and put a hat on the ground, and that is how we earned a little money. Sometimes we did very well, but it was still a miserable life to have to push yourself along the ground or to let yourself be carried. Nevertheless, I was one of the lucky ones, because I had been given a car. I was able to earn money through the pity I had aroused. But then I became ill and died. I am glad now, for just look at this miracle. When I was a human being, my legs were shattered by bullets, but now that I am in the new world, both my legs have been restored. I can jump again and do what everybody else does. Oh, I am happy. I want to thank God and serve Him faithfully, because He has given me back my limbs. He went on, "When I was living on earth, I did not believe in God. I kept saying, if there were a God, He would not permit wars between the nations on earth. If there were a God of love and justice, there could not be such a misery in the world. I could neither believe nor pray. As far as I was concerned, there was no God and no life after death. What a surprise lay in store for me." While he spoke, he kept shouting for joy. He was so happy he wanted to jump, dance and sing with me. I was rather taken aback by his conduct and my thoughts were confused. He said that he had been in the war and that his legs had been shattered. Now he had his legs back, and he wanted to thank God who had given them back to him. "Yes," he said, "I shall do absolutely everything I can to express my thanks for the great goodness and mercy that has been shown to me. I am ready to atone for what I did wrong in my life. I shall do everything that God asks me to do. I shall thank God who has restored me to health." He talked to me with joyful urgency, and probably because I looked more and more surprised, he asked, "Don't you believe me?" I confessed, "So far I have not believed, perhaps for the same reasons that you did not. Moreover, until now I thought I was only dreaming, since everything here is so like it is on earth." He replied, "I don't mind what your feelings are in the matter, whether you think you are still in a human existence or not. All I know is that I am alive, and that is important for me. I don't mind what I see or who I meet. I take things as they come, I believe everything and I am happy. All I want is someone who can teach me to pray.